Good day. This is Rick Thomas, host of Yachting USA, the podcast produced by Yachting International Radio. I'm sitting here at the Palm Beach International Boat Show with my friend, Juan Cleveringa. Ron and I go way back, and he's currently vice president of Berger Boat Company, and he's sitting with us today to talk about the wonderful world of yachting from his perspective. Ron, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Good to see you.
It's good to see you too, my friend. So I thought it'd be fun to touch on our history because that's part of what this podcast is all about. This podcast is about the yachting industry, our history, our heritage, where we come from. Because I think once we understand where we come from, we got a good sense of where we're going.
Exactly.
And you and I come from an interesting place. We're both in the industry about the same period of time. I'm in for 42 years right now. You're in for about 42 years.
Just shy of 40 years.
There you go. I met you up in Sagatok, Michigan. You were working at Broward Marine. I think Frank Dennison had a house up on the hill, or was it Kenny had the house?
No, that was Frank's.
Frank's house on the hill. You were building a yacht for a buddy of mine, Captain Fletcher Dunn, called Reality. And I traveled up there to take a look at his project with him. I met you there. I also learned that I was going to be a father for the first time on that trip up. My wife and I were in Chicago before heading over to Sagatok. And
nice.
That's when she let me know she was pregnant and she couldn't have cocktails with me anymore.
So our kids are about the same age.
I think so. That was in 1989. Yeah. So,
yeah. Fantastic.
Cool. A lot of synergetic relationships here. And how long were you working with Broward?
It started in 1984. I was with Broward for a total of 16 years. With about a year and a half stint with Lloyd Ships Australia.
Did you actually go to Australia to work?
I did, yes.
Wow.
That was a pretty cool experience.
I bet that would have been a cool experience. Not a lot of people are aware that Broward actually was manufacturing out of two facilities, two yards either.
Yeah, they started building in Saugatuck, Michigan in the late 70s and continued through about 2001 or two.
Any idea how many boats came out of that facility?
Oh, boy. At least 50.
Wow.
We were building close to five boats a year out of that facility.
And initially cold-molded wood hull structures, right?
Not out of Saugatuck.
Oh, okay.
Saugatuck was always aluminum construction. Frank, when Chris Craft closed the Romer plant in Holland, Michigan, hired a number of those employees and started up Broward North.
Okay.
Good group of guys.
Wow. You touched on a legacy brand there, the Chris Craft Romer, the 50 foot. That was truly, at the time, a large yacht.
Those were big boats at the time.
It's like another little break here. Sorry, Graham. It's a reality check.
No extra charge to the noise.
Anyway, we'll get through this. So the Chris Craft Romer plant shuts down. Frank picks up some good talent.
Yep.
Starts up Sagatuck. You join him up in Sagatuck and stay there until you were there, and then you left to go to a Lloyd ship. That
correct? And then I did come back.
All right.
That stint at Lloyd's was in the late 80s, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time ago.
Yeah.
But then came back, worked at the Sagatuck yard until 2000.
Right.
When I joined Berger Boat Company.
There you go. That's where we're going to go. So let's talk about Berger. That's why we're here. Broward will have this opportunity in the future. So,
yeah,
it's interesting. I actually did get to meet Henry Berger briefly when about the time he was selling out to Mr. McMillian, I think.
McMillian,
right. And that was in 1986. I had just started. There was a purchasing director. Gosh, I used to have his name. It's in my finger. But I built a relationship with him, and through him, I got to meet Henry briefly. But he was not doing so well.
Right.
I know, remember when I met him, he was struggling with his health a little bit. So McMillian comes in, they sell to United Boat, which really was a subsidiary, I believe, of Tacoma Boat Building. And I recall that they had a facility briefly in Lantana, Florida. And I think two boats were built in Lantana.
There were actually four boats built in Lantana.
I stand corrected. Okay.
And that was through McMillian.
McMillian. So and that predates the United Tacoma.
Correct. And then Tacoma bought the yard from Mr. McMillian, and they closed the yard in late 1989 or 1990.
Yeah, and I remember it was not a long duration.
No.
They were doing things there.
So for the most part, most all the burgers, with the exception of four, were built up in Manitowoc.
Correct.
All right, cool. So yeah, I had done a little bit of business with Burger through Nautical Structures at that time, not a whole lot. And then as I understand, in 1990, economic conditions, the luxury tax that Bush put into place and a few other things put a lot of pressure on the shipyard, and they temporarily closed it.
Correct.
And I think the Burger employees actually came together to try to keep things going.
The former Burger workers group was formally organized with the goal of reopening the shipyard. These people went in and winterized the yard, closed it down on their own time in hopes that the yard would reopen. They tried to get financing, but they just couldn't get everything put together. But they continually hoped that the yard would reopen.
How cool is that?
It was a pretty cool endeavor.
Right. Wow. So that would have been in 1990, right?
Right. Yes.
Okay. Because I remember I was at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show in 1993. I was at a showboats party. And back then, one of the kind of must-do industry events was the showboats party. Mm-hmm. Usually had it at somebody's house or estate.
Right.
The night before the show opens. And I was there at that party when Jim Ruffalo and David Ross walked in. And I think it was just destined, because ran into them almost the moment they showed up. You got into a conversation. They just introduced themselves as having recently over the last few months acquired this boat building company called Burger.
Right.
And they came from Chicago. They came from photography, I think.
Jim and David came out of high-end photo processing.
Right.
They had sold their company and were wondering, what are we going to do with our lives after this? And David was down in Florida, ran into John Todd.
I remember John, yeah.
John mentioned to David that Burger had closed down. David called Jim Ruffalo and said, hey, I know what we're going to do for the rest of our lives. We're going to buy Burger Boat Company, reopen it, and start that company back up again.
Wow. So
through a lot of hoops and a lot of stuff that they went through, they reopened the shipyard in February of 93.
So I talk in my podcast about doing well for others. I think that's important in life and in business. You get what you give. And so I remember that party. We met Jim and David and realized that these guys are new to the industry. Spent the entire evening with them, introducing them to people in the industry that we knew. And I say we because my partner, Bob Boleyn, was working at the time. So Bob and I take Dave and Jim under our wing, so to speak. Spent the evening with them and then collaborated with them during the rest of the week at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show. And at the time, I believe Windrush was being built for TED.
Yes.
That was our first opportunity to start doing business with Burger. And I'm proud to say that every single Burger built since Jim and Dave came on board, worked with Nautical Structures, and we supplied equipment for the last, 30 years.
31 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's real. And that's this industry. That's this industry. When you do a good job, you build a relationship. And this is an industry of relationships. You get what you give. And you get loyalty. You get commitment. And I'm the first one to say that you guys could have found a supplier that was going to supply equipment at a lower price.
Always.
We're not the bargain basement supplier. Our equipment is arguably one of the more expensive of its type in the industry. But it was good stuff and supported well.
Yeah, and you stood behind the equipment.
Always.
Every time.
Yeah. Plus, you guys were building some interesting boats. And so we had to follow suit and come up with ideas and solutions that fit. I'm going to bring up some names here shortly, but Sakara 4 was one of those.
Right.
That passerelle we built for the back end of that Fantail Yacht was like...
That was a challenge.
That was real. Yeah. And it executed so cool. So this is something not a lot of people are aware of, but I'm just going to list a couple names, and then you tell me what these all have in common. Don O'Keefe, I'll never forget him with his pipe. J.B. Hargrave, C. Raymond Hunt, Cordy Rover, Louis DeBasto, Vreepak, Andrew Winch, Donald Blount and Associates, Greg Marshall Design. These are really well-known naval architects and design houses.
That they are.
And what's in common amongst all of those?
Burger Boat Company.
I love it.
We've built several designs to almost every one of them.
Yeah.
It was a joy to work with these folks.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually did my homework, and every one of those firms and gentlemen supported your builds at some point in time. I think that's freaking cool. It speaks to this industry because they're not all North American businesses. They're international. They don't all work out of the same playbook. They got different designs, different philosophies, different concepts of how they do things.
Yep.
It's cool to be able to sit here with you and say, in my career like yours, I had the opportunity, the pleasure, the luxury, the privilege to also work with every one of these guys, these firms, and they're all A-listers. They're all top of the game.
They're all good players. Yeah. And there's no question.
I met Andrew Winch many years ago when I was working with Craig DeFoy of building the first big boat at Lurson with Limitless.
Okay.
And Andrew was in that yard at the time before he had started his own gig. And I thought, that's cool. There he is at the front end.
I love it.
Yeah. So there we go. And then, of course, another list that I think is pretty cool, and I'm only hitting some of the high points, Windrush Mergav 5, I think it is. What I used to call the twins, Hull 505 and 506. Yep. Ingot, you're going to have to help me with Tokalon. Yes. Sekera 4, we talked about that.
Yep.
That really cool heritage-looking vessel. SysW, we actually won an award for all the handicap access equipment we've built for Mr. Walgreen. He had built SysW, and that was a really cool project because we had to provide Wheatley nautical structures at the time. Most people listening to my podcast know that's my heritage. So everything that we did was done around the ideas of getting people on and off
right.
the boat with their hand.
It was access for the boat, for the owner.
Yeah.
And everything you guys supplied worked flawlessly.
Yeah, it was cool. Thank you. We didn't make any money doing it, but we had fun.
That's irrelevant.
So SysWC Owl, Lady Gilmarie, and Northland.
Yes.
Northland is a real cool boat, an expedition style boat with a burger's look, which is cool.
El Luis de Basto design.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Exterior and interior.
Yeah. No, he's quite a guy.
The other thing that's cool about Northland, people think of us as an aluminum boat builder. Northland's a steel hull with an aluminum superstructure.
Yep.
We started in steel, in wood construction, then moved to steel way back in the day. One of the first shipyards to do welded steel.
That says a lot, doesn't it?
It does.
That's that because that's what's happening in Northern Europe and across the board. And Delft to build a couple of big boats that way, but you got the King first.
Well, we were also the first to do aluminum. Reynolds Aluminum came to Berger and said, "We got this funky new material, marine grade aluminum. Let's build a boat out of it."
Wow!
So it was a 36-foot Express. It was the first aluminum boat, welded aluminum boat built in America.
That's so cool. Not many people know this for sure. So that's a nice look at the history of Berger, your evolution. The next thing I think is important in boat building is what defines your quality and culture. Every boat builder is unique, and Berger is absolutely unique. Describe your culture and quality.
Quality is job one. We build quality in everything we do. The systems are tested thoroughly. There's a good sign-off system, and we learn from the past. If we have a problem on a boat, we figure out what it is. We correct the issue. We learn from it. We also will go back to see if there's other boats that we might need to correct. We're proactive.
Right.
Another thing that we're very conscious of is reliability. We don't want you as Mr. Yacht Owner to say to your friends, "Let's go on a cruise in 6 weeks," and then you have to call them and cancel because something doesn't work. There's a lot of redundancy, reliability in all of the systems on the boat. And one of the big things that we're really anal about are squeaks.
Squeaks.
Can't have squeaks.
Okay.
In the joiner work.
Ah.
And our guys are very conscious about squeaks and rattles.
That's not easy because boats move.
And
the moisture and heat and cold, all of that affects.
Yep. People who build the yacht, the guys in the shipyard, boat is a fixed object. It's sitting on shores, on ground, on the shore.
It's not moving.
It's not moving. They go for sea trial. They realize, oh, this thing actually moves and the drawers can't open. The doors can't fly open. And you can't have squeaks.
During
a sea trial, there's guys walking the boat with blue tape. If they find something that's a rattle or a squeak or whatever, they're marking it so that it's corrected.
attention to detail.
Attention to detail.
Attention to detail. Things that I wouldn't have necessarily thought about. But there you go. That's so cool. You guys are building some new boats right now, and I was involved in some of the front-end engineering of your 55-meter Greg Marshall design boat.
Yes.
Cool boat. I spent a lot of time on the front end. I can speak freely on this one that a lot of engineering and design work went in way before Nautical Structures cut the first piece of metal.
Right.
And it was a lot of interface with both Greg Marshall Design, Greg and Matt DeLay, as well as yourself and others up at Berger, to achieve what will ultimately be something very special. So without getting into too much detail, put you on the spot where you don't want to talk about things you can't talk about, what do you see as design trends and technologies that Berger's incorporating and embracing?
There are lots of different design trends. Working with the people like Greg Marshall, we're working with Evan Marshall right now, Frypack, people like that. They're on the cutting edge with a lot of these technologies. Our team is always researching different technologies as well and incorporating them as they see fit. Some exciting things on the 55 meter is the fact that this, and you're very familiar with this, is the 37 foot tender in the tender garage.
Oh, yeah.
That's a huge tender in a 55 meter.
I can tell you, speaking not necessarily out of school, because I was very hands on, we very much appreciate all the clearances you allowed Nautical Structures to enjoy in designing around that tender.
Our pleasure. That half inch that you got was well deserved.
I actually measured it to closer to 18 mil, so a little better than
a half little inch. Better than a half inch.
No, it's great though. It's that's the collaboration piece. So you're not taking something off the shelf and making it work.
Right.
You're looking at spaces. You're looking at weights and structure and the way things operate and move. I was just sent some photos of the back end of your boat.
Sure.
With that transom door that was built, which is pretty freaking cool, where the lower search section of the door becomes watertight.
Yep.
The upper section maintains a basically weathertight closure specification because you are building this 55 meter boat under 500 gross tons.
She has a usable gross tonnage of about 720.
That makes sense.
But it had measured gross tonnage of 499.
Magic.
So makes it a bit of a challenge, but we've been successful so far.
Fantastic. And I'm so excited to see this eventually finish out. I think it's going to be what this industry in the United States, North America really needs. And that is bringing to market, bring to the table a true luxury large yacht built to a high standard that can stand toe to toe with what's coming out of the middle of Europe right now. And I will tell you that we talk about this in almost all of my podcasts. And I try to talk about this anytime I'm talking to somebody that's in the boat building business.
Mm-hmm.
Boat building's tough. It's tough.
It's
the margins in boat construction are small. If most business people understood what kind of margin you're working to, you'd walk away saying that much work doesn't make sense.
Right.
But everybody I've ever talked to that's building yachts is doing it because they have a passion for it, a love for it. They grew up around it with it. They like the challenge. They are proud of the product they build. But when you and I started in this business and I did some research, 44, I mean, in fact, I know I've missed a couple shipyards in North America, United States and Canada, were building cruise served yachts,
right,
80 foot and larger in the 80s and 90s,
mm-hmm.
44 of them. Of those 44, I think there was 33 or 34 that were building over 100 foot. And there are how many left right now?
Three or four.
Three or four. And five if they throw in Viking because they've got their 80 foot and 90 sport fish and they need crew. Wow. Think about it. What a shrinkage and what a tragedy in so many ways that our maritime heritage has watched that happen in just the last two decades.
Right.
And there's lots of reasons for it. So it's nobody's fault particularly, but it's something we need to pay attention to.
Totally agree.
I mentor and work with YPY, Young Professionals in Yachting. And I have this conversation with a bunch of these guys and gals. Not one of them that I've had a conversation with so far was aware of that part of our history, mm-hmm. our heritage. They all looked at me like I was smoking something. You're kidding. No, really. So, you know, you've got just a handful of builders doing this, but you're here.
Right.
And I'm thrilled that you're here. And what we want to try to do is figure out how to keep you here, which is building good product and making the industry aware that you're building something unique, special, good, and giving you Faircraft at the opportunity to build some more of this stuff.
Yep. We want to keep projects in the United States, as many projects as possible between the yards that are left. The yards need to make a fair profit.
Agreed.
By making a fair profit, the yard will still be around 10 years from now or that to help the value of your vessel.
Yeah.
So that's important. Getting young people into the industry is huge. YPI is a great organization because it gets them together. We made a presentation of the 55 meter to them, and that was a lot of fun.
I bet it was.
And a lot of questions. They were extremely engaged. It was exciting to see. And we want to do a follow-up with them.
They're our next generation, and I'm going to be doing a podcast with them where we'll have a group of us around the table and get a lot of voices going, because I think it's important to recognize that this is the generation that will take us in whatever direction our North American industry is going to go.
We even go further than that. We got to get into the high schools. We get the kids excited about the trades.
Yep.
At Berger, we've had really good luck getting folks who come out of high school, need a career. They start out as a general laborer. We find out what area they're interested in and direct them through. And we've had extremely good luck with that.
That's really important.
It's exciting to see.
Yeah. Yeah. When young people start going down the path of trying to figure out what their career choice is going to look like, the guidance counselors in most schools are basically saying, hey, you need to get your SAT squared away and go to college.
Exactly.
For what?
Yep.
I'd argue that there are some college courses and degree programs that are required if you're going to do something. But a lot of the stuff these kids are coming out of school with are worthless. Other than they demonstrate a dedication of 4 years of their life to doing something. And they've got a piece of parchment that says, I did that for 4 years. But what are you going to do with a political science degree when there's 8 million other kids with the same degree program?
I had someone tell me one time that a degree is a ticket to play the game.
Yeah.
It really is all it's a piece of paper.
That's right.
It's the person behind that piece of paper.
Yeah.
And their willingness and their drive to move forward in whatever career path they want. And we've had in engineering, in some professionals, as well as in the trades, we've had individuals just shine in both of those areas.
Right. And that's what you want. That cream comes to the top. And you create the opportunity to let that happen and just let it do it.
And even from my perspective, 1984, when I'm graduating college, sit down with my three partners in our senior design project with our counselor. One was going to Bath Iron Works, one to Newport News, one to Norfolk Naval Shipyard. I had a job at Broward. He says, you three can go. I want to talk to you. You don't want to go into yachting. there's no way to make a career in yachting. That was 40 years ago.
Wow.
So
think about
proved
it.
Him wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My parchment says I got a degree in underwater technology from FIT.
Okay.
Yeah. Which was great. It got me into the oil fields and I worked a stint as a commercial diver. But again, it opens doors, right?
It does.
And that's what it's all about.
Back to relationships.
Yes. We're sitting here together after 40 years.
Right.
And that's the part that I think a lot of people don't get initially, but once they've been in this industry long enough, they do understand. It's a relationship industry. If you've been in it for a while, it is 2 degrees of separation or less.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, your opportunities are immeasurable. As long as you're a good guy, not a scoundrel.
Exactly.
A scoundrel that
you get washed out very quickly.
Or at least known real quick.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So one last thing I want to talk about before I wrap this up. And this is something that also is going to repeat in these conversations that I have is owner's experience. I talk about in this industry, there's so many disciplines. They're all important. I'm not shredding anybody's validity or importance in this industry, but I talk about a sacred trinity that I truly believe is how you measure the health of our industry. You've got owners, crew, and shipyard support.
Mm-hmm.
If all three of those disciplines are healthy, you have a healthy industry. If any one of the three are sick, you've got some issues. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, right now, the U.S. shipbuilding industry is not so healthy. The ones that are in are doing okay. There's projects going on, but it's not like it was. I know from my time and some future work I'll be doing in crew recruiting and crew management, that area is challenged. There's a lot of disconnecting crew. There's a lot of turnover and issues. Captain Kelly Gordon doing an amazing job of bringing a light on mental health in yep. crew, which is so important and has been so overlooked or ignored. And crew's an issue. And then, of course, the owners. I mean, if the owners basically say, screw it, I'm out, we no longer have an industry. Done. And if they all want to just go and charter a boat, that's good for the charter brokers, but that's not good for you and I.
Right.
So all of those disciplines are really important, and yours is one of those three legs.
Right.
And we need to figure out how to make sure that the boat building and the refit industry in North America stays vibrant and alive and healthy.
With regards to the shipyards themselves, you've got Berger Custom Shipyard, Delta Custom Shipyard, Westport, which is more of a semi-custom shipyard.
Yep.
I think you've met with Daryl earlier today.
I did.
And they've done an amazing job in their business model. Berger and Delta oftentimes work under an NDA. Mm-hmm. So we have to be very quiet.
Of course.
And being quiet is deemed you're not healthy.
Right, right. Yeah, you can't talk about things.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was involved in a Delta build a number of years ago. It was tragic in a way. Biggest boat they built. Probably one of the most amazing yachts I've ever seen built in North America. And I was around Cakewalk when it was built mm-hmm. too. Albatross. And they had an NDA that I think went 5 years or something. They couldn't talk about it. They couldn't publish a photo. It was a Burgess build, managed project.
Beautiful boat.
That boat, stunning. Absolutely spectacular. If Jack and Ivor had been able to take that boat and use it and market it and put it out, it stands today toe-to-toe with any Fed ship, any Lursen yeah. built. Yeah, I just said that. Because it does. It was, and Burgess was part of that. They held their feet to the fire in a few things and made sure that boat was built to the highest standard and was built to the highest standard. Mm-hmm. But yeah, their NDAs and confidentiality requirements, contracts, agreements, caused that boat to fly under the radar. Very few people know about that boat.
Exactly. And to on top of that, the charter industry. Our boats and many of the Deltas do not go into the charter industry. They're built for private people who are passionate about their boat.
Yeah.
They don't want their boat in charter. So again, it disappears.
Yeah.
It sails off into the sunset, literally. And we hear about where they're at,
right.
But we have to be quiet. So that's part of the issue on the
shipyard. That's a tough one to overcome, isn't it?
It's very difficult. And getting people to understand that is difficult.
Right. At the same time, anybody listening to this podcast, here's a takeaway. If you want to make sure your confidentiality is maintained, and Berger's a good organization, as it was Delta, to make sure that happens, because these guys are serious about maintaining confidentiality.
Exactly. Exactly. We want the owner to have fun.
Right.
Fun from the day they sign the contract to the day they sell the boat. And if they don't get back into yachting, maybe they sell the boat because they have a 10-year plan. They're going to do yachting for 10 years and then go do something else.
Right, right.
They're still part of the family. We get calls from owners of 60-year-old boats. Can you help me out with this, the other thing? And those are fun. Those are great relationships to have with those folks. Berger that I worked for, which was opened in 1993, had nothing to do with those boats.
Right.
But they are still part of the Berger family.
They have a Berger badge.
They carry the badge. Carry it proudly. You look at an older Berger, the chances are they're flying a Berger Burgee.
Of course.
Because they're proud of what they own.
Absolutely. They should be, too.
Yeah.
Rendezvous. Would you ever do another rendezvous with ours?
Perhaps. I'm going to say never.
No, that was a great way, though, to bring a lot of positive synergy and relationships together.
It is. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
We just bring this kind of stuff up because we're looking for ways of connecting with the decision makers, the high net worth individual in his family office and his broker,
mm-hmm.
who is going to say, hey, I want a 40 or 50 meter boat. What do you suggest?
A lot of these guys don't know what they don't know.
Exactly.
And they're gonna go with whoever they trust most, and whoever they trust most says you should do this. So, you know, again, I'm fully transparent about what I'm trying to do with this podcast.
Right.
It's Yachting USA. It's really all about the North American industry. It's not excluding the European. In fact, I'm sitting with FedShip. Farouk and I are going to have a conversation in a couple of days. Great guy. Wonderful guy. Wonderful industry guy that has a perspective that's world perspective. And I love and respect that.
Very respectful.
And we're going to talk about all of this stuff. But at the end of the day, the Northern European market, booking market's not stressed right now. They're doing fine. Mm-hmm. We need to get back there too.
Yep.
Because I will go out and say that if we're doing fine and they're doing fine, everybody benefits.
Everybody wins.
When one part of this industry is not healthy, it's not good for everybody.
Correct.
So, yeah, where am I going with this is if you and I can get the ear of a high net worth individual to say, hey, right here in North America, there's this boat building company. It's got a legacy. It's got the right vision and mindset. And they build a product that you can't duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
Go see them. Talk to them.
All we ask is for a chance.
Yeah.
If we lose it on merit, we lose it on merit. But if we've never been given the chance.
Right. Absolutely.
We can't show you what we can do.
So again, it's why I'm so excited to be putting this out there is to hopefully maybe someone will listen to this and say, hey, mm-hmm. let's go talk to Berger again. It's been a while since we've talked to these guys.
Yeah.
So let's hope so, right?
Perfect.
So,
I love it.
Palm Beach Boat Show, you're here for the week.
Here till Sunday. Yeah. I actually leave Monday.
Oh, good stuff. So we'll see you around at some events. You and I are both in the International Super Yacht Society.
Yep.
Board members.
Board members.
And I think you and I both have an obligation.
2 o'clock.
So, Ron, I have to thank you very much for sitting with me, for having this conversation, and opening up to everybody who listens to the Yachting USA podcast. I'm your host, Rick Thomas, and until we have an opportunity to convene again, I am out of here.